Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Edison, Blake Murphy. Just to put a capper on our conversation about the PK on Sunday, which, man, would be glorious to see this thing come to. It's very rare that you have a sporting theoretical conversation that actually plays itself out and you get to actually have a winner and loser and finish the take. Like, the take has, you know, a clear side going into it and then a clear victor coming out of it. And we'll see on Sunday whether Canada has a PK in that game. But what I was trying to say is, like, what if, and if I would have done this, we had more time before the break, a hard break, hard out, was that perhaps there is a sentiment amongst these Team Canada players, and probably specifically Jonathan David, who is well-versed in taking PKs, and you know what, maybe the rest of his teammates who realize that he's well-versed in taking these PKs and is the better option, but that they don't want to be the ones messaging that to Alphonso Davies, that in that sense, maybe they would go to John Herdman and say, hey, can you be our conduit here? Can, like, hey, we really would prefer that Jonathan David take the next PK, so can you step in here and be the voice of reason?
And here I thought it was just FIFA doing all the politicking.
Yeah, no.
Shaking my head.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, I think if you believe in your organizational culture and your program culture, I think that they would tell you, the hope is they don't need to do that and go through back channels. Like, that can be an open conversation, and they could say, Alphonso Davies, you're our most important player and you're our best path to scoring a goal on a non PK. But, like, Jonathan David is an elite penalty guy.
And, like, but do you believe that there's something wrong with the team culture if they're afraid of doing that? Cause I don't necessarily think that that's true. Like, I think you would want Alphonso Davies to fight like hell to say,
yeah,
no, I want to take the PK.
Yeah,
like, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to say, no, we can't have you guys hash this out because there's too many egos involved.
No, I don't think that's the case. And I don't know these guys intimately, you know, most of them I've only talked to once or twice when we have them on a show or whatever. But no, there's been no indication that there are any kind of cracks like that in the culture. Like, Kyle Aaron came off the bench last game. Like, there is obviously a buy-in up and down this roster, and they talk a lot about the depth and how they need contributions from everyone. I'm not saying that, like, I think that that is a thing. I just think if you believe in that culture and that, you know, you're going to need 14, 15, 16 guys game to game, you can have those conversations as a group and you can have them openly. And Alphonso Davies, who is a phenomenal player and probably recognizes that he's at his most dangerous putting the ball on the foot of guys who finish. Like, I don't think it's, like, that wild. I also could see that locker room being one where everyone wants the best player taking that opportunity and they're fine with that. Like, I don't think anyone on that team would disagree that Davies is their best player or their most important player to the program. So in that case, like, maybe they're fine with it. The same way we talked about yesterday, like, it's hard to argue with, you can argue with it, but it's hard to be too upset about best player, highest leverage spot. And maybe that's the feeling with the group as well.
Yeah, I like the scenario that you painted where they're up 4-0 and it's irrelevant. And then, like, if they're up and they have a PK to make it 5-0, go ahead. Like, have Richie Larea take the penalty in that situation. I'd be fine with
that. Let me do it.
Yeah, no. let fly Blake over and he'll do it.
Let Chris Hadfield comes down a little spaceship. And, I said this the other day. I still have it in my head that, like, Kyle Aaron has to score the first goal.
Yeah.
Which worries me because if he doesn't start on Sunday, like, I know that he'll be in the mix at some point if they're trailing or tied.
You know what I didn't like either was when Richard Wilson said that, hey, Croatia's at its best in the final 10 minutes of the game when everybody else is tired. And, like, now I'm envisioning either Canada leading or being scoreless again. And then Croatia scores late to steal a point or two.
Yeah. But also, like, Canada's whole thing is depth, right? Like, they used all five substitutions against Belgium, and it wasn't, I mean, there were maybe some tactical reasons, but it was also, this is how we maintain this pace over 90 minutes. So we'll see. You can't sub out everyone, and you can't, you know, you can't do line changes and stuff, but Canada has talked this whole process. I mean, through qualifying, because you were guys were in and out and things like that, but even heading into this tournament, that depth is a strength, and they're going to lean on that. We saw them use it against Belgium. I would expect the same against Croatia. The names just might be different if it's nil-nil or that Canada's ahead.
Yeah, and let's see Canada go in there and F Croatia, and then at the end of the match, John Herdman stand at the center of the field and de-pants. And then we'll see who's laughing at that.
I don't need to see that.
Well, I'm just saying. Might be a thought. All right. Raptors play tomorrow against the Dallas Mavericks.
What's left of them? Yeah, what's left of the Raptors play tomorrow?
Scotty Barnes is not left. He's still out with the knee thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's, we've been ankle things, and it was an ankle thing in the playoffs last year. And I don't know. Not that there's like a through line here of him being brittle or something, but like.
Plays hard.
Yeah, is that just the nature of it? Like yeah. when you play hard and yeah, you play a lot, you get hurt sometimes, and everybody's also hurt in the NBA?
Yeah. I mean, if there's not he including the playoffs, he has missed 12 of a possible 106 games. That's not that much.
It's 12 too many for me. Pascal Siakam cleared for full contact as well. So that's good. Like, so what are we thinking? Like next week sometime maybe?
Yeah. Like Monday might be a little aggressive, but the way the schedule works, I mean, first of all, they're coming off of a stretch where, geez, they could have played 4 or 5 or 6 games with only these 10 guys available. And instead they've at least had a week where they can breathe a little bit and try to focus on getting guys back to health. They have a schedule ahead where it's game day, off day for a while. So you're going to get some practice days in. Maybe you don't practice Tuesday, but there should be a practice day pretty much everywhere in there. The Raptors have generally preferred their guys to get a full practice or two in before bringing them back if the schedule allows. And I think that they're going to be cautious with Siakam anyway. It's hard for me not to look at that Cavs game on Monday, though, because the Cavs and the Raptors do kind of occupy a similar spot in the Eastern Conference hierarchy, and like that could be a really fun game, and the Raptors beat them.
Yeah, and it's not like they're buried, right? It's not like they're the Lakers and they're buried by their record to this point. They're 500 despite being the walking wounded for the vast majority of the season, but they haven't lost 3 in a row this season, and that's a possibility.
Haven't won 3 in a row either.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just kind of trading wins, and that's what happens with the parity in the NBA at this point, but it's also like when you're this banged up, we talk about it with the Leafs defense earlier, like that's all your, like it's a best case scenario is you skate through missing a whole bunch of guys at 500.
Yeah, so it's a the entire league, there's a lot of parity, but especially in the Eastern Conference, like mm-hmm. there's a lot of pretty good teams in the Eastern Conference, and not that you should necessarily be thinking about playoff positioning at this point, but yeah, if like the things start to go, like if you go through this stretch of games and Pascal Siakam does not return for Monday, you lose, so that's like 4 straight you've lost after losing to Cleveland, then you go to New Orleans, go to Brooklyn before your respite, in quotation marks, against the Orlando Magic there. Like
on the second night of a back-to-back.
Yeah, I wonder, like, is there must be a point, I mean, people are only human here, that the pressure does not totally inform your decision-making in regards to injuries, because obviously you're going to defer to what's best for the player, and especially when you're talking about your franchise player.
Yeah.
But I am talking about, like, you're trying to win basketball games, and this is not a developmental year. This is a get a home playoff date, win a round, win a couple of rounds in the postseason. Put yourself in a position to be maybe one of those teams, if things again go pear-shaped in Brooklyn, that you look like a destination for Kevin Durant. Just saying, like you could see the scenario in which where they have to, you know, Jeff Doughton Jr. is playing 35 minutes a game. That you,
oh, I wish. I wish. That's my dream scenario. You like might. I know nobody liked the Tampa Tank season, but yeah. I have a fondness for.
You're sick.
Yeah.
No, you're a sick
for
person.
Some of those games. I am a sick person. I will say this. Around this time last year, was it November 26th? Is that, do I have the right game?
Well, it's November 25th today.
Yes. So there was a game last year, November 26th. So tomorrow, it's the exact date of the Mavericks game. The Raptors come in. They're 9-11 heading into that one. Svi Mykhailiuk plays 18 minutes. Wow. Precious Achiuwa, making one of his first starts of the season, plays 33 minutes. They lose that game. They end up at 9-13, and then guys start getting healthy, and the guys who don't get healthy at least are only hurt one at a time instead of all at once. And then from there, they figure it all out and go 39-21 the rest of the way.
Yeah, it is also true that
it's not impossible. And like, well, it's a little disappointing because I expected the Raptors to start a little stronger because they have that level of continuity that is so important early in NBA
seasons.
Started
real strong against Cleveland.
And then, you know, even that opening 7-game stretch, they went 4-3 or whatever against a pretty tough.
Kept playing back-to-backs, though.
And yeah, and then everyone got hurt. It's like, so they, I do think there is an element of squandered opportunity in terms of just like you could have stacked a couple extra wins, but I'm not looking at where they are. And I'm not certainly not looking if they head into that Brooklyn game at, you know, 9-12 or whatever. Like, I don't think it's a do or die spot. I think this team knows it's a long season. It's just, it sucks is all it is. Is like Fred VanVleet's had this illness on and off. Everyone, like,
different illness.
It's, oh, we don't know. It could be the same one. It could be a different one. It's just like this, these cascading injuries are so demoralizing. And then, oh, by the way, potentially the MVP is here on Saturday. Also, like from a fan perspective, takes a marquee date on the schedule. Like Luka Doncic is one of the absolute, like a top five, got to see him in person player in the NBA. And I still want to see that game and it's fun, but now you're looking at, okay, yeah, but Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes aren't playing and Fred VanVleet might not play and the Raptors might be, you know, starting a couple of guys who we thought might be in the 905. It takes a little bit of the wind out of the sails of, you know, a pretty fun game.
Yeah, they'll be healthy at some point. And yeah, Pascal Siakam returning hopefully by Monday. If not, then maybe shortly
Monday
thereafter.
Seems optimistic.
All right, fine.
I'm not saying it's not possible. They have two practice days before then. It just seems like... today would have been one of those practice days.
Anyways, the season doesn't really start until after Christmas, Blake. I don't know if you know that. Like, that's when the season really starts. Just like in the NFL, the season doesn't start until after Thanksgiving. So the season is about to start on Sunday.
The season doesn't start until after Christmas for basketball, even though the standings are very sticky after the 20-game mark.
Well, that's, I mean, yeah. Make sure, accelerate the timeline on Pascal Siakam. Have him in that lineup against Dallas
Raptors
tomorrow.
Are still in playoff spot right now.
Yeah, well, and Dallas is just hanging into a play-in spot right now in the Western
Conference. And they've had a weird stretch where, like, a lot of their metrics are like, this team's really, really good, and then they lose a bunch of close games, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. They're a weird... There's something about them I don't really trust outside of Luka Doncic. Maybe it's like Christian Wood being your second-best player. I don't know. There's not a... Something's a little off there in just how everything's piecing together so far. But they have Luka Doncic, so I'm going to give them a lot of runway to figure it out.
Yeah, because he's good and stuff. You know who was good as a Toronto Blue Jay? Teoscar Hernandez, but he's a Seattle Mariner now.
Sure
gone. Is. Gone. And his offense, gone. Eric Swanson, in, but does not produce offensively because he's a pitcher. He's a relief pitcher. We talked about the Brandon Nimmo thing ad nauseum. We talked about the Cody Bellinger thing ad nauseum. And we're more than happy to talk about it again if the Blue Jays sign either one of those guys, but they haven't. You know what we haven't talked about? Is there's a, and Ben Nicholson-Smith just wrote about a couple of them on sportsnet.ca. There's other outfielders who hit from the left side and who have on base that are free agents. And I think you do have to add a center fielder, but like the potential exists that you add like a defensive center fielder. You do like some sort of Bradley Zimmer type thing again, right?
Say his name.
Okay, you do Kevin Kiermaier, I guess, right? and he's going to make more. I'm fine with Kevin Kiermaier. It's amazing, too, the Kevin Kiermaier thing, that there was some pushback initially when he kept winning the Gold Gloves and Kevin Pillar kept getting left in the dust. And people were like, nah, this Kevin Pillar. And no, Kevin Kiermaier, different stratosphere when we're talking about defensive center fielders.
Yeah, there's one reason to dive for the ball, and it's you got to a ball you had no business getting to, and it's at the absolute limit of your physical capability, but you get there. The other is you took a really bad route and had to slow up and dive because otherwise it was going to just drop right in front of you.
Or you're a TV diver. I'm not saying Kevin Pillar is, but, you know.
No, I think the evidence on Pillar was more of a bad route that he can make up for with some pretty spectacular plays.
And he made plenty of spectacular plays. But there's some interesting left-handed corner outfielders that are available. Mm-hmm. So Joey Gallo is out there. He's a free agent, and he kind of he had a resurgence, I guess, slightly in L.A. when he was traded by the Yankees.
It was short-lived.
Yeah.
So Joey Gallo is a tough one because I did my digging on Joey Gallo when he was let go and landed with the Dodgers. And again, this offseason, you know, I do have the reporter background. I know how to find out about guys and ask around about it. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of a sentiment that Joey Gallo is meant more to hit 30, 40 home runs on a non-competitive team than be in the heat of a playoff race. I don't know how much that stuff matters to people. I don't know how much you can get past that with like a good clubhouse and stuff like that, or you show up and you start hitting and who cares beyond that.
But he did start hitting in Los Angeles, and you figured if that was a guy that needed the confidence, he had the confidence right away.
Yeah, and then guess where his numbers went?
Yeah, I know. They look almost identical to his Yankee numbers.
Almost identical.
Yeah, yeah. And he was still walking. He was walking as a Yankee too, but it doesn't matter if you hit like 120, right? And you don't hit for power.
No, like it's, you are the composite of all those things. And if you're walking, but you're never getting hits, that doesn't make the walks super valuable. It's better than outs.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, and like, who knows, like we could head into this year and he stops drawing walks. It's the Cody Bellinger thing of, well, you haven't displayed that you can punish pitching enough. Like, yeah, you can walk into some solo home runs, but
yeah.
What are you doing beyond that? Like he hit 160 last year, and I know we're in a post batting average era, but he hit 160 last year. Like
we're not in a post batting average era. We just need to evaluate it for what it is, which is how many hits you get per at bat.
Yeah, we're in a post batting average era in like a 240 hitter has to be bad. Pretty confident in saying a 160 hitter has to be bad. I don't know that we've seen a guy hitting at a 160 clip be a positive.
Every single one of those like 70 hits in your season were home runs, and you took 150 walks. Yeah, probably not.
And here's the other thing about Gallo too, is like he's probably still a plus corner outfielder at this point. He hasn't started a game in center field since 2019.
No, not a center fielder, but yeah, more than a capable corner outfield defender. All right, another guy.
By the way, one thing I just want to preface Gallo and any of the names we're going to talk about, they are not as, you know, maybe not as sexy or buzzy as some of the trade options and things like that, or a guy who got the qualifying offer like a Brandon Nimmo. All these guys that we're talking about in these next few minutes, all it costs you is money.
Yeah, that's it.
Which is a real thing to consider when you're trying to compete for the long haul.
No question.
So who you get next?
Well, we know that the Blue Jays were interested in Andrew Benintendi, right? Like that was a name very much on their radar, and many Blue Jays fans were distraught when the New York Yankees went out and got him. And then
enough with the Kansas City Royals.
All your Kansas City Royals are Toronto Blue Jays. But yeah, they were less distraught when they saw him get injured, and I mean, they didn't wish him to get injured, but yeah, obviously not a factor for the Yankees because he was not available for the Yankees. But he's back out there. He's a free agent. He's a lefty bat, has a little bit of on-base skill, has a lot of batting average skill. He's hit 20 home runs in the major leagues before, but again, we're talking about a corner outfielder.
Another guy hasn't started a game in center field since 2019.
No, none of the guys we're going to talk about here. And the last guy, like,
certainly not,
like barely even a corner outfielder at this point. But yeah, how do you feel about Andrew Benintendi?
I mean, given some of the names we're going to talk about, he at least has what's going in his favor is that he's only 28. So you're, you know, even if it's a shorter term deal, you're betting on a guy getting back to a certain level while he's still in his prime years. It's not, you know, hey, can this 35-year-old do it one more time? Or, you know, a guy like Cody Bellinger, who I think is a reasonable gamble for some teams, but it's been 2 years since he displayed those skills. Benintendi was, like, he's coming off his, when we adjust for league factors and things like that, basically his career year offensively. And I know that is not people's favorite thing to hear about a guy who had five home runs last year, but he hit over 300. He OBP'd almost 400. And yeah, he only slugged 400, but that's a plus player
playing
in 2022.
But also playing most of your games in Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so he was difficult to hit home runs.
WRC plus of 122, which means he was about 22% better than league average at the dish when we control for a whole bunch of factors. And then, the metrics had him as a slight negative as a corner outfielder. That's pretty consistently been the book on him with the defensive analytics. But I think his eye test is a little better than that as a corner outfielder.
Well, and also, yeah, he had to play a pretty tough corner outfield in Boston, certainly. I would also say that I know by the end of his Red Sox tenure, Red Sox fans were more than happy to see him go, but he does have experience in this division. If we want to talk about the Joey Gallo thing, needs to go to like Miami or something for a bit, like Andrew Benintendi is capable of playing in this division. All right. Lastly, another guy who we know the Blue Jays like very much.
Former Blue Jay for a minute, reportedly.
Goodness. And I guess, worked out for the best because he played like 60 games last year because that's his wand.
But it was the year prior, right?
Yes, you're right. Yes.
Because it was supposed to be, the reporting was
but
that.
But it was a 2-year deal.
Along with George Springer.
Yeah.
Michael Brantley was coming.
That's right.
He played 185 games over the last 2 years.
Yeah, because he's always hurt. And he was hurt in the playoffs for the Astros.
He's going to be healthier in his age 36 season next year.
I don't, but I love Michael Brantley.
So do I.
I'm stuck. I'm in a tough place here, Blake, because I really like Michael Brantley. I love his bat. And like I said in one of our previous conversations, that you should be talking about upside, not necessarily the long haul of 162, because I think this team gets into the playoffs. You should be thinking about what is the best possible short series team you can put together. And if Michael Brantley's healthy and performing at his career norms in the playoffs, that's a guy you want.
Also a guy who's been through it, right? Like, this is a guy with a lot of experience. You don't have a lot of guys in their mid to late 30s on this roster that have been through World Series runs, whether healthy or not. And
you don't want him anywhere near the outfield. Like, honestly, like 50-50, like DH, even if he's 50% playing a corner outfield spot, you don't feel great about
it. And that's where it gets tough to figure this out. Like, is this a team that can afford to go out and sign a guy who, even when healthy, played half his games in left field and half at DH?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't know. Like, sure, if it's a $1.5 million, $2.5 million kind of deal, absolutely. To have that bat as a bench option, an occasional fill in, like, but basically, the path to Brantley playing time on this team is he's better than a 26th or 25th man at this point, still. Like, clearly, he hit almost 300 last year and had a 370 OBP. You talk about professional at-bats, like that Alejandro Kirkness at the plate,
yeah,
of no pitches ever wasted.
Except left-handed?
Well, yeah, but we're talking about a part-time guy. And, I don't think with how many righties this team has, I don't think you worry about one side of your platoon not hitting lefties well. I just think the path to playing time for him is tough, that he'd almost have to accept, like, hey, I'm a part-time guy now. And I think that he's probably thinking he's still an everyday player for someone because he's got the bat to ball skill.
Well, still. even if he thinks and wants to be an everyday player, he hasn't been, right?
Right, but this is where, like, maybe he goes to someone else, because, like, Houston just won the World Series and they were playing him as an everyday guy until he got hurt.
Yeah. But then he got hurt because he's always hurt.
I do love Michael Brantley, though.
I know. Well, again,
professional at bats.
That, and I don't know if you're saying that disparagingly.
I love watching a guy up there who has a very good idea of what a pitcher is trying to do to him and can fight off borderline stuff. And, like, yeah, he hasn't really hit for power in a little while. And he was only ever like a 15, 20 home run guy. But no, that's a guy who just knows how to hit.
Well, and not even like 100 walk guy, right? Like, not a guy, he'll take his fair share of walks, but just high batting average, just knows how to, take what the pitcher gives him. I like Michael Brantley a lot.
No strikeouts?
Yeah, you got to like that. Oh. I don't like a fly ball going to left field and Michael Brantley being out there and one, thinking about his potential of catching it, and two, thinking about all the bones he's about to break as he runs towards it. But yeah, I like him at the plate. I like him a lot. I don't.
We went from center fielder to left-handed hitting corner outfielder that kind of works in a rotation to now it's just like maybe this guy just DHs 50 games.
Yeah, I don't think, honestly, any of those three are fits for this Blue Jays team.
I think any of them, and this applies to Bellinger too, could be a fit, but it can't be the solution, right? Like none of these guys can plug the Teoscar size hole. And we'll talk next week about, you know, how to distribute those assets that you have remaining, whether it's another hitter and outfielder, or maybe it makes sense to go on this ice cold pitching market where nothing has really moved. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they still make two outfield additions, and one is a splashier one, and one is the Kiermaier Brantley tier of
we
need another adult in the room and that kind of stuff.
The problem is, though, that if one of, like, you do the Kiermaier thing, like, he's playing the majority of the innings in center field. Like, if you get, like, a Brantley, that's your big move, is that you spend $15 million on Michael Brantley, and then you back him up by getting Kevin Kiermaier. Well, you already know, you better know, that George Springer's not playing the majority of his games in center field, and God knows Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is not playing center field. So, yeah, Kevin Kiermaier is going to be out there more often than not.
Yeah, that's your guy. And like, Kiermaier-Brantley is probably not a very good way to, you know, not platoon. I don't mean platoon in, like, a righty-lefty way. I just mean platoon is in two guys share 162 games somehow. No, Kiermaier-Brantley is not the one of those that makes the most sense to me. I do think absolutely somewhere you have to have someone who you trust to play center field that isn't Whit Merrifield behind George Springer, and you'd like some of that bat to ball stuff and a lefty bat. I just, you know, you could go through these and come up with pairs that make sense to you, right?
Sure. Brandon Nimmo still makes the most sense to me. We'll see. All right. When we come back, we'll talk to our pal Ross Tucker, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy. And American Thanksgiving was yesterday, so Sunday becomes the start of the NFL season.
And we don't have to be thankful for, like,
no,
10 months until Canadian Thanksgiving rolls around again.
That's right. We can take and take and take without being thankful at all. Let's talk to Ross Tucker, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Happy Friday to you. Happy Thanksgiving, Ross. Let's start with the Bills, who come away with another victory, kind of ending their mini slide a bit. They don't look super dominant, but we know, you know, it's been a tough go for them recently with the massive snowstorm that happened just south of here. Von Miller, though, leaves the game yesterday, and there was real concern that could be an ACL, and he's done for the season. They're calling it a lateral meniscus tear, and he will be reevaluated after 7 to 10 days, so out for next Thursday. I mean, if he's gone, What is the impact on this Bills team in your eyes, Ross?
Yeah, I mean, it's gigantic. They brought him in there for a reason. Every time he's had a sack this year, it's been at a critical time in a game when they absolutely have had to have it. And, you know, he chose them, right? I mean, the Cowboys kind of wanted him for sure. The Broncos wanted him back. He could have stayed with the L.A. Rams. And it was kind of unique and cool that he picked the Buffalo Bills. He wanted to be a Buffalo Bill. And out of all those other choices, because I think he wanted to win three Super Bowls with three different teams. I don't know that anybody's ever done that before. And so it sounds like they're going to try to figure out there's a way he can come back later on this season and play, but pretty devastating for sure.
Yeah, it's not great. I mentioned that the Bills, I mean, they put up some big point totals the last couple of weeks, but Josh Allen hasn't had the massive passing statistical games, at least, that he had early in the season. Makes the big pass at the end of the game to get the Bills into field goal range and win the game against the Lions. What do you make of how Josh Allen and the Bills have looked offensively the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not quite sure, you know, how to put my finger on it. I guess the one thing I would say, and I think it's important to note, is there really are ebbs and flows generally to seasons. Like, do you guys remember last year when the Chiefs were really struggling and everybody was like, oh, man, we found out how to play against the Chiefs. You have two deep safeties and Mahomes isn't patient enough. You know, I think different teams have different plans. And right now, the Bills are getting a heavy dose of that. Two deep safeties. Are you going to be patient enough to run the football? Or are you going to, you know, force things? And I think they're not always patient running it. And even when the underneath stuff is there, you know, in the passing game, Josh Allen has kind of uncharacteristically missed some of those. You know, that earlier in the year, he was really getting the ball out quick, and even if you tried that against him, it didn't really work because he was taking the underneath stuff and killing you. But he's missed some throws recently. Obviously, the red zone turnovers have been really well documented, and that's the issues they're having right now. I'd like to see them continue to run it a little bit more, continue to be committed to that. And a lot of times you can kind of run people out of that defense if you have the patience to do it. But they've had to rely more on his legs. And I always look at it like this. They don't really want him running that much, right? So the more Josh Allen runs, the more you kind of feel like things are not going the way the Bills want them to be going offensively.
Ross, it's been a weird 4 weeks for the Bills, kind of coming off that loss of the Jets. There's, you know, some concern that they're 0-2 in the division, and Josh Allen's health, he guts it out for that Minnesota game that they lose in hilarious fashion in overtime, and then they just get by two pretty mediocre teams. Now, they have four division games left over their last six. Where is your confidence level in, you know, you just laid out a bunch of question marks, but where is your confidence level in this Bills team getting to the playoffs in a position where you feel good about them in the postseason?
It's a great question. And I would say not nearly as high as it was earlier in the year. You know, the way the Patriots looked last night, that's going to be a tough game for sure for the Bills. The Jets, you know, they beat the Bills with Zach Wilson. So what are they going to do with a quarterback that you'd like to think or you'd imagine is playing better than Zach Wilson, right? I mean, that'll be interesting. And then, obviously, the Miami Dolphins might be the best team in the division right now. So it's kind of weird because it went from feeling like the Bills were clearly the best team in the division to, you know, they're in real danger of not making the playoffs and certainly of not winning the division. I mean, they're going to have to. Now, the good news is I think a lot of those games are at home. Mm-hmm. And so the Miamis and the Jets and the Patriots, a lot of times they're going to have to come to Buffalo. So they've got the quote-unquote easier part of their schedule coming up. Not in terms of necessarily the opponents they play, but being able to win a home. But even that hasn't been a lot, right, with the loss to the Vikings. But they need to find a way to win these home games in division. And if they do, they'll be division champs, which they could really use. I mean, you know, it's a bummer because these losses have put them where they no longer really even control their own fate in terms of trying to have home field advantage. You know, we went from thinking that the Bills had a great chance to get home field advantage and were the best team and the Super Bowl favorites to now it's like, you just wanted to win the division and get a home playoff game.
Yeah, yeah. Still have one more game to go against the Dolphins, and if the Chiefs could lose a couple more games, they have the tiebreaker on that team as well. I want to talk about Zach Wilson for a second here, Ross, because he obviously performed poorly. He was doing enough to win until he wasn't, and it kind of started with that Patriots game, and then concluded with another Patriots game in which his offense only scored 3 points. And afterwards, yes, we all saw the comments where he was asked if he felt like he let the defense down and said no. And Robert Saleh, in his in his remarks when making the quarterback change to Mike White, basically alluded to the fact that this goes beyond the play on the field, right? That there's a clubhouse dynamic between the offense and defense and his teammates. Like, how does that play out? Because we only see what happens at the podium. Does it go beyond that as far as an attitude with a second overall pick?
You know what's so interesting about that question? It is so dependent on what he's like behind the scenes. You know what I mean? Like, it is so dependent on what his work ethic is like, what his demeanor is like with the other guys on the team. And we just don't know that. If he's earned their respect with how he conducts himself behind the scenes, then, you know, they're frustrated certainly with how he's playing. And I'm sure they didn't like the comment he made, but they might chalk it up to youth or whatever. If, you know, he made a comment like, I need to work harder. And that really jumped out to me. And everybody was like, yeah, he's got to work harder. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just what he was taught to say, but that made me wonder just how much time he is putting in, because when you watch him play, it doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. It doesn't look like he's very well prepared.
It doesn't. It's a tough one. It'd be interesting to see how much different that looks with White in there, who, you know, had some ups and downs, as you'd expect last time we saw him. I want to circle back to the Thanksgiving slate, because, Ross, you were a part of a historic day, probably in part because you were covering that game. Cowboys game, Cowboys-Giants pops the biggest viewership in NFL regular season history. The Cowboys once again look pretty good. They're up to 8-3 now. A couple signature wins of late. Are you buying on the Cowboys as a, I mean, I was going to ask NFC East, but let's go NFC overall at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I am. I think the Cowboys are pretty darn good, and I've been very impressed by them really on both sides of the ball. So, I think they're just about as good as anyone with the way they've been playing, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this unfolds. You know, that's another one where I kind of went with, you know, I was thinking that the Eagles were clearly the best team in the NFC, and that, you know, I don't know who is the closest challenger. So now, you know, I think the Cowboys are looking pretty formidable. I think the Niners look like they could really do something. And I've always thought, you know, with Brady, that clearly, you know, you'd have to watch out for what the Bucs could do. And even the Vikings, I thought, showed again last night that they are legit. So now it went from like the NFC is not that great to, wow, there's like five teams in the NFC that could maybe go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the knock against the Cowboys would be that they lost Aaron Rodgers with a broken thumb, which we now know is the thing that he's been dealing with since week 5 against the Giants. And if there's statistical, you know, backup to that being the cause of some of his problems, is completion percentage dropped almost 10 points over that span. And he, you know, to his credit, I guess, tried to downplay it, is going to play through it. Is that a mitigating factor? Do you look at Aaron Rodgers with a broken thumb and say, man, if you play this season back with a fully healthy Aaron Rodgers, maybe we're not having the same conversations about that Packers team and about him being at the end of his competitive window?
Yeah, it's interesting. This is something I actually feel really strongly about, which is that if you game, nobody cares what your injuries are. Nobody cares. Like, and I think it's a little bit weird that it's kind of coming out now, right? I mean, he did it, what, 7 weeks ago? I mean, my question would be, is it healed yet? I mean, broke his thumb 7 weeks ago. When the information comes out now like this, there's always a reason. There's always a reason somebody wanted this information out there. And I guess what, you know, could it be a factor in his throwing because he's missed some throws that he normally doesn't? Of course. Yeah, of course it could be a factor. But like I said, you know, I mean, in Buffalo in 2004,
I started the last four games at center or at left guard knowing I had a herniated disc in my back. You know, I didn't tell anybody. Nobody knew. And even if they did, nobody would care. You know, almost every guy out there has something that's bothering them right now. And so ultimately, you're going to be judged based on your performance, and you should be. You should be judged solely based on how you perform. It felt like somebody wanted to make sure he had an excuse, or if perhaps even, I don't know, guys, maybe at some point if they lose another game or two, they'll want to put Jordan Love in, and this kind of gives them, you know, an excuse to say, you know what, we want Aaron to rest that thumb, and it hasn't healed up, and now we're going to give him a chance to finally rest it. I don't know. I find it very curious that 7 weeks or whatever after it happened, the information comes out.
Well, maybe we see the Packers put Love in at some point. If you want to put some Love into the hearts of your family members, Ross, you can go to myfrontpagestory.com this holiday season. Is that right?
You know, I'm a big fan of segues. That was awesome. That was awesome. I love that. That was smooth. That was amazing. That
Thank
was
you.
Almost as amazing as getting your significant other or any loved one a story from myfrontpagestory.com. It literally looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper. It's framed, printed out, beautiful pictures of her or the family or whatever you want. And then when she actually opens it and reads it, it's really cool. First of all, they never know what it is. They're like, what is this? And you're like, I had a story written about you, which just sounds cool to tell somebody to get a story written about them. And then when they actually read the quotes about, you know, how much she means to you, she will cry. Like, I'm telling every dude in Toronto right now, go to myfrontpagestory.com for the holidays. Get either your mom or your significant other or whatever. Get them a story from myfrontpagestory.com. I can almost guarantee she will cry. Good tears. You will win.
Ross, well done on your segue from Blake's segue. It's a couple of segue boys. Thanks for doing this. Happy Thanksgiving, Ross.
Absolutely. Likewise to you guys. I know yours was earlier, but appreciate being on with you. I did Cowboys Giants yesterday. Now I'm in San Diego to do Air Force San Diego State tomorrow night. So it feels weird, by the way, Thanksgiving, and it's like 75 and sunny out here.
I wouldn't hate it. That's for sure. See you, Ross.
See you, dudes.
Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker, football podcast. That's an interesting spin on the Rodgers thing, which is, well, not that he's making up excuses for sucking. That, yeah, we could all have inferred that. But that this might give the organization cover, like in a week, to say, hey, broken thumb boy, why don't you have a seat? And the guy that, you know, started the whole discord between us and you, he's going to start because, boy, we'd better, because he looked horrible in brief opportunities in that one game against the Chiefs. Holy cow, when the Chiefs had no defense, he looked horrible. But let's see what we got in Jordan Love. That's it. I could see that, yeah, manifesting itself.
Yeah, I thought Ross was going somewhere else when he said he was in San Diego. Well, first of all, I'm dumb because the Chargers don't play there anymore, but my head went to the Chargers.
Yeah.
And we've got Emily Savard, who's producing the next show, walking around in a Cardinals sweater right now. That, to me, is maybe the most – it's not going to be the best game of the NFL weekend slate, but maybe the most interesting because that's two kind of precarious coaching spots and two seasons that are – I mean, Arizona's is probably off the rails for good now. The Chargers have a chance at least to turn it around.
Yeah, it's, man, that Chargers team, I mean, the way they added, especially defensively, and injuries were part of it, and I understand that.
Show me the team that isn't, right?
Right. But, and we saw them, despite the loss, in the first matchup against the Chiefs looked like the superior team. But, yeah, they have a more legitimate case to be a playoff team in the AFC as compared to the Cardinals, who were 4-7.
Kind of still believe.
What, in the Chargers?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the spin zone for you, is that the season hasn't started yet for them.
Yeah.
Like, they're 0-0, and they go into the first game of the season at 500, 5-5. So, yeah, I wouldn't discount their chances.
Pretty soft schedule the rest of the way for them, too.
Yeah. Any thoughts on Zach Wilson and the abuse that he's taken in the media over the last few days? Because he has been the whipping boy, right? Like it was Jeff Saturday. Everybody got to yell at Jeff Saturday for even having the temerity to take the job offered to him, spending all that time in the media, having no experience, capped off by Bill Cowher calling him like a disgrace to humanity, I think, on that Sunday before his first game that he won.
Yeah.
He's now 1-1. And for the last week or
almost,
so.
Yeah, and they almost beat the one-loss Eagles.
It's true.
Who suddenly look a little shaky for a 9-1 team, but yeah. Whatever. We'll see how that goes.
On the strength of Jeff Saturday's coaching, he's been spectacular. Allowed to use the quarterback of his choosing, I think might be more impactful to his stuff. But yeah, no, the Zach Wilson, I will say that Zach Wilson kind of has a, not dissimilar to J.J. Redick, a look of a guy that's easy to dump on, right? Somebody who looks like he's been given everything. And we're not going to get into it. This was a side conversation that maybe we'll save for next week, but Booger McFarland, anyways, it kind of alluded to the fact that he thought that this was an entitled kid that was never held responsible for his actions. I think that there's a default for a lot of people when it comes to Zach Wilson. Now, he sucked, right? Like, there's just no debate about it. But, like, going beyond that is a little extreme.
Yeah, nobody would care about the entitlement if he was entitled his way to 350 passing yards a game. I'll tell you right now.
A few entitled quarterbacks around the NFL.
You ever seen Friday Night Lights? What do they do with J.D. McCoy? That's all that is like, it's, oh yeah, we're going to build the privileged kid into a quarterback because he was born tall and wealthy. I don't know. I mean, Zach Wilson doesn't have the tall thing going for him by quarterback standards. That's 6'2", but, I don't know enough about Zach Wilson, the person, to judge that. But I do go back to one of the greatest films that we have as artistic inspiration, and it's Draft Day, starring Kevin Costner,
right?
Where what's the big reveal about the quarterback prospect that seems like the quarterback prospect is basically Trevor Lawrence. Like, how could you not take this guy? And, you know, Chadwick Boseman does ask about his birthday party. No teammates showed up to the guy's birthday party. He had no teammates at his birthday party. And I think that is, maybe Zach Wilson has teammates at his birthday party, but there is, I'm joking a little bit, but there is a huge component of leadership to the quarterback position that, like, I don't know that there's a comparison for.
Although they said the same thing about Justin Herbert, right? When he was drafted, that he was like kind of a weird guy and maybe not a leader of men. And I don't know if he's maybe grown into that, or maybe it doesn't matter because he has a cannon for an arm.
Well, this is the thing is, like, I think you can play your way past that. Like, if you are just not a natural leader in the way that we think of quarterbacks, you can play your way past that. That requires, though, you to play extremely well. If Justin Herbert came out and was suddenly very bad, I don't think he would get the same level of, you know, faith from that locker room. And like, Justin Herbert there's proof of concept with him. Like, he was extremely good the last 2 years. And even as the team has stumbled a little bit this year, he's still been pretty good.
Yeah. So, he's had his ribs smashed in half for a good portion of the season.
Yeah. He played against the Jaguars with no ribs.
Yeah. It's bad. It's not what you want.
So anyway, there could be some of that, but I do. And it's one of those things, like, none of this matters if you just go out and perform and you're really good, but it's when there are questions about a guy in year two and what his future with the franchise is, that sort of stuff starts to matter, because I think that gives you a level of confidence in that guy being able to build from the position he's currently in.
Yeah.
Trevor Lawrence isn't losing his job right now.
No, honestly, the worst thing that happened to Zach Wilson is the Jets actually got good and they're like, hey, we'd love to see you develop, but like, we can't afford to maybe waste a season where we can make the playoffs and our defense is spectacular. All right. Time now for last call. Brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Let's look forward to Sunday's NFL slate. The game of the week has to be Bengals in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Against the Titans. And the Bengals are 3-point road favorites against the Titans.
Hopefully, it doesn't sound super likely, but hopefully Jamar Chase is back.
Yeah, which is crazy because he was on crutches last week and like, he's going to play. And yeah, when that injury happened, it was seemed like they were vacillating between putting him on IR and he's going to maybe play. Bucks 3-point favorites 3.5-point favorites in Cleveland. The aforementioned Chargers in Arizona are 3-point favorites. And tomorrow, I'll give you one World Cup line for you. How about France, -130 against Denmark, +410. That was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Raptors and Leafs both in action tomorrow.
Canada +265 on Sunday, too, to win.
Oh, boy. All right, we'll be back on Monday. See ya.